Thursday, August 15th, 2019. Time is 9:54 a.m. We will begin the meeting for the Richmond Borough Committee of Wasatch Front Regional Capital, and we thank you all for joining us. I know we have a few people who will continue to trickle in, but we have enough of us here to go ahead and get started. Item one on our agenda is introductions and our agenda. I'd like to just go around the room really quickly, and everybody can let us know who you are and let us appreciate why you're here. And then we're going to go ahead and go through some approval for our minutes. So let's start over here. Katie, you want to just tell everybody?
Yeah, Katie Jordan, Wasatch Front staff.
Gary, you're asking this question.
Tina Cannon, Morgan County Council.
Andrew Gruber with WFRC.
John Ramsey, South Jordan City Mayor, representing the Utah Cities and Towns.
Ted Knowlton, WFRC.
Jenny Wilson, Salt Lake County.
Amy Winter Newton, Salt Lake County.
Ken Bragger, Willard Mayor, representing Fox Hill County.
Beth Holbrook, UTA.
Cameron Dill, Utah Cities and Towns.
Helen Peters, Transportation Program Manager, Salt Lake County. Here for Will Summerborn today because he's a descendant from.
Excited.
Yeah.
Read you and the University of Utah.
Brian Wilkinson, I'm representing the Utah District Council of the Urban Land Institute.
Dave McCall, 12th City Council, representing 12th County.
Are you
going to
ask you?
Yes, of course. To the minutes from our meeting held May 16, 2019. Ed, do you
want to? Yeah, thanks, Mayor. In item three, under a comment from Roger Bordnick, it currently notes that he said there is less funding for roadway projects than for transit dollars, but what he said, and which is factually true, is the opposite. So that is the correction.
So we're going to make note of that. Does anyone else have any concerns, questions, comments about the minutes? Seeing that, I'm prepared to accept a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
Second. And a second. All in favor of approving the minutes as amended, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right. Moving on to the chair's report. I appreciate the chance to just give a brief little update, and I'm going to ask who are here that are working on this as well, if they have anything they'd like to add to it. But just a quick update on what's going on in the southwest part of Salt Lake County. Six municipalities that make up the southwest quadrant of Salt Lake County have come together with Salt Lake County, and together we are implementing a visioning study for that growing area of the county. There are infill projects here and there in other cities and other places, but the bulk of the land left to be developed in Salt Lake County is in our area, and we want to make sure that we work together in a unique fashion to think regionally and then act locally to ensure that infrastructure goes in adequately and that the quality of life that our residents enjoy is maintained as we continue to grow and that growth takes place on those several thousand acres. So Monday we kicked off with the major stakeholders, and we had a packed house. We had every entity and stakeholder in the area that any of us could even think to invite represented. And we appreciated all of them coming as we, the seven mayors, all sat together. We introduced the consultant who's going to be doing this work. We appreciate very much Wasatch Front Regional Council. Megan's back there. She's a superhero to us. We appreciate her facilitation of this. We have received funding from DLC partners of Wasatch Front Regional Council, Salt Lake County, UTA, and from Salt Lake County, and each municipality is putting some money into the study. So $250,000 has been secured to do this visioning study, and we look forward to coming up with a solid regional plan that will not be legally binding for any of the cities to follow, but the intent is to have this be a guide in planning decisions for each of our communities, because our boundaries now kind of overlap. There's a picture right there. Whoever brought that up, thank you.
Katie.
Okay, thanks, Katie. From our kickoff the other day. And we just really appreciate the chance to involve all the stakeholders. We want input from everyone as we try to create a vision. We can either have something fantastic come out of this and have the southwest part of Salt Lake County be quite dynamic and an amazing place to live, or it can be a disaster if we don't plan well. Roads, traffic, air quality, all sorts of things can really be impacted negatively if we don't work really well together to plan. So we appreciate Salt Lake County's support. Mayor Riding is here, Mayor Wilson is here, and I would love to just see if either of you have anything you'd like to add to that.
It would be hard to add more than what you've already said, so thank you, because and we are excited to get this going and excited to see the results of it.
Thank you.
I echo that, and thanks to each of you and the other mayors who are willing to participate. I think it is groundbreaking.
We keep hearing that it's unprecedented for six local communities and the county to come together to really try to understand the best way to plan an entire region, but it's critical to us that this be done well and that we get this right. And so we've got great minds on board. We have a fantastic technical committee that's advising us, and it's made up of the experts from each of our cities and from the county in planning and engineering, and we appreciate their help as well. So stay tuned. This will be a project that will take the next 12, 13 months in three phases, but the first phase will be completed before the next legislative session, and we appreciate that. We look forward to having some really solid data to back what some of the things that we already know and the people who live in our area already know, but it will be really great for us to get some of these answers and hopefully be able to work toward implementing that in this growing part of the county.
Mayor, can I add briefly that we just love helping projects like this, which are so distinctive, kick off and help make them happen with some funding through TLC, that, you know, it's so cool to see a group of communities coming together and say, look, we have shared issues, and what we each do is going to affect each other. We need to take another look at regional systems that flow between our communities. Let's tackle this together. And it's exactly one of the things that I think TLC was really meant to help communities do. So it's really exciting, and kudos to the leaders with the communities and the county.
Thank you. All of you, everyone participating in this, we appreciate it. Thank you. Whether you're participating through funding or through staffing or just through support, whatever it is, we appreciate it. And I think that as we work through this and continue to grow wisely, our residents will appreciate it as well, the people that we all represent. So thank you. Okay, we're going to move on to our public comment portion of the meeting. If there's anyone here that would like to speak, we would love to hear from you. We're going to allow each person 3 minutes, ask you to keep your comments to 3 minutes so we can keep our meeting going. But if there's anyone here that would like to speak, the opportunity is now yours. Okay, seeing none, we will close the public comment portion of the meeting and move on to item 4, the Wasatch Choice 2050 Vision, New Implementation of Ideas and Events. We're going to have a discussion here. We appreciate Andrew Brewer and Ted Knowlton and Julie Nierenstadt for being here to help facilitate this discussion and give us some good information. We're going to talk about this, our region's shared vision and the Wasatch Choice 2050 Plan, which you all know has been approved. act that we as the Regional Growth Committee are the steering committee for. As a reminder, the vision is the foundation of the Regional Transportation Plan, and you may notice, and maybe you haven't noticed, so I'll point it out, that right up there in the front next to the American flag is a new poster. We're going to have the opportunity to hear a little bit more about that. But I just want to remind everyone that this is our vision, and we all have the opportunity to have input. And the 2050 plan has been approved, but there's always room for adjustments and tweaks as necessary, as we see fit, you know, as things continue to grow and maybe more information comes out, we may be able to make little adjustments here and there. So, beginning September 23rd, there are 10 implementation workshops that will be conducted. And I'm going to turn the time over to Andrew, Ted, and Julie, who will preview the release of the Wasatch Choice poster, the website, and the new implementation ideas and resources. So, Andrew, take it away.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mayor, and all of our friends and partners that are here. This is, I have to say, a really exciting day for us to be unveiling at the first public meeting the new Wasatch Choice 2050 vision poster. Hooray! We're really excited. And so what you'll have seen is this was actually hung up out there. There's one here, there's one right behind Councilmember Cannon, and then there's one right over here as well. So what is this all about? Well, we all know that Utah is growing really fast. We have been growing and we're continuing to grow. And the really good news is that we have a plan for how to handle that growth and maintain our quality of life. And what I want to do is, let me just read this. Utah's growing, we have a plan. Our future quality of life depends on the choices we make today. Wasatch Choice 2050 is our community's shared vision for transportation investments, development patterns, and economic opportunities. This vision map and the key strategies that are embodied in the map, they show how advancing this vision can enhance our quality of life even as we grow. So let me just give a little bit of an orientation of what we're actually looking at here, and feel free to look around at the other versions. But what this is, it's the whole Wasatch Front from Southern Box Elder down through Utah County, with insets also for Tooele County, and for the Tooele Valley, and for the Wasatch Back. And this is, if you were to go in your time machine out to the year 2050, this is what the structure of our region could be like if we make the decisions and investments that we've all contemplated together. And so I should emphasize that this is not a Wasatch Front Regional Council plan or vision. It is, but not exclusively. And what you see here, it says partners to the vision. There are so many people, many represented in this room today, that have been engaged all along and will continue to be, and this is our community's vision. So I'll just note here, WFRC and MAG, our Metropolitan Planning Organization partners to the south, the Chambers of Commerce around the region, Envision Utah, the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute, Metropolitan Research Center at the University of Utah, the Association of Counties and the individual counties in the area, the League of Cities and Towns and all the cities in the region, and of course, UDOT and UTA all participating to come up with this vision for our future. This vision is rooted in four key strategies, and I'm going to tick through each of those. Strategy number one for our future is to provide transportation choices to the residents of the region. And so what you'll actually see when you look at the map, you can see the lines on here, and there's three different colors. Red is for roads, blue is for transit, and green is for active transportation, biking and walking. And you can see the network of roads, transit, and active transportation throughout the region. Now again, this is what our region would look like in 2050 if we make the investments that are called for in the vision, that are needed to be made between now and 2050. This would be, so the list of projects on here is not all the new things, it's what the whole system would be like in 2050. And what you should see here is a balance and transportation choices for people. Now, one of the key things about the whole vision is how do we go from having a vision that we've all developed to actually making it a reality? And that's going to be one of the key focuses as we roll forward. And when I say we again, I don't mean WFRC. I mean all of us and all of you in your organizations as individuals and organizationally to make the vision a reality. On the transportation side, what does that mean? Well, one of the things it means is that we need to keep investing in transportation. And let me just give you a key fact, which is concerning to me, and I think to the vision, is that with the funding sources that are in place right now for transportation across the region and in the state, over the next 5, 10, 15 years, even out to 2050, if nothing changes, we will spend many billions of dollars on new road capacity projects. And those projects are needed and should be invested in. However, we will spend, with the current funding sources that are in place right now, almost nothing on new transit projects. So UTA has enough money right now to maintain and operate the system that's in place, but basically, with a few exceptions, there are not resources in place right now to enhance the transit system. This is just a reality that I think we need to confront. We need to invest in our roadway network in a smart way, and we need to also invest in transit, because where will we be 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now? Just think about it. If we do billions of dollars of roadway investment and don't do any new transit enhancements, let alone active transportation and local improvements. So this is just one of the realities that we have to confront. Provide transportation choices. Strategy number two is support housing options. There is so much energy and attention right now around housing affordability, appropriately so. Will our residents have appropriate choices in what kind of homes they can live in with our population growing? Big picture, let me give you a sense of what we're talking about here. Right now, today, on the Wasatch Front, the mix of housing between single-family homes and multifamily or attached homes is about 75% single-family and 25% multifamily or attached. This is not contemplating a radical change in that, like a flipping of that. Rather, what it contemplates is by 2050, the mix would go from 75-25 to about 60-40. 60% single family, 40% multifamily or attached homes. So responding to the market and demographics and shifting the balance over time. Cam?
And that shift is also my colleague. That shift is already underway as we look particularly in Salt Lake County over the last 9 years. You've seen more multifamily housing built than single family housing built countywide. It's not necessarily the case for the entire region yet, but that has been the trend thus far.
Right. The third, and Ted is going to talk more about that mix also. The third thing, preserve open space. Third strategy, preserve open space. Why is it so great to live here? Well, there's a variety of reasons, but one of the most important ones is our access to the outdoors. And we've got to preserve that quality of experience in our beautiful mountains, and make sure that we're protecting critical lands, farmlands, and then also having parks and trails that weave right through the fabric of our communities as we continue to grow. And then strategy number four is the one that pulls all of these together. Link economic development with transportation and housing decisions, considering the relationship between transportation, housing, and open space. And it's there where I'm going to turn it over to Professor Knowlton to pick up from that.
Okay, thanks, Andrew. So we boiled this fourth strategy down into two words, where matters. Even hashtag where matters. Okay, so if we're linking economic development and transportation and housing decisions,
We're physically coordinating those things together. And you can see this right on the poster. That is the story of these growth centers, these hotter polygons that tell the story of jobs, housing, housing choices, located in places where residents and employees can access high-speed transportation, both roadways, public transportation, and bicycling. Now, what is a center? A center is a place that's more intense than its surrounding, it's walkable, and it's a mix of uses. Now, here's the reason why this is such a key to the Wasatch Choice vision. When you have centers coordinated with high-speed regional infrastructure, think of the benefits that ripple out from that. Residents have, and employees have different transportation choices, which means they can save money, which means that they might drive a shorter distance, which means through transit, through active transportation, through shorter driving distances, it means cleaner air. It means that they save money. It means that they can access more destinations. When you cluster growth near higher speed transportation, you can get to more places in a shorter amount of time. So it's great for the economy. So it really is a key element, its very own strategy of the vision. Now, as you reflect on the centers that occur throughout this vision map, I'll stand on this side where you can see me better. This is my better side anyway. These represent communities' individual visions. So this, you know this, you participated in this, you guided it as the Regional Growth Committee. This is the product of a four-year process where local governments came forward and said, this is our long-term vision from now out to 2050 as we think about different ideas embedded in the transportation plan at the same time. And so this is not a one-size-fits-all story of centers and the coordination of those with transportation. It bears the fingerprints of the communities across the region. It bears the fingerprints of communities that have a lot of greenfield land and communities that are focusing on creating or enhancing centers in infill and redevelopment areas as well. And so this is really your local vision tied in with that regional infrastructure concept. And so this is the overall Wasatch Choice vision map. Now, the vision map itself, Katie, I'm going to go to the presentation now, is...
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, please.
So I just want to note one thing, and I apologize, Ted, if you were planning to say this, and I'm jumping ahead of you, but the point that I made before about the housing mix, that we would go from about 25% multifamily housing in the region now to about 40%, going back to Ted's point about where matters, if we create opportunities for more development to occur in centers coordinated with high capacity transportation, then more of that multifamily housing could occur in those centers. Think around a Trax or a Front Runner station. And then it creates a vibrant kind of downtown feel, but then also has the ability of preserving the character of existing suburban communities. And I think, isn't that this is one of the things that, as particularly as local elected officials, that you have to deal with concerns from residents about what's the right type of housing that's going to come into our community. Well, that we're not saying the vision doesn't contemplate multifamily housing happening everywhere in every neighborhood. It makes sense in some places, particularly in areas that have high capacity transportation, because then people can walk or bike and can leave their car at home and then preserve the character of those existing communities. Also, I just want to quickly sort of tie this back to what Mayor Ramsey and others are talking about Southwest Salt Lake County. That's a really rapidly growing area, but just because it's growing fast doesn't mean that that's the area that should absorb all of this growth in multifamily housing. Some has to happen there, right? Particularly if it can be coordinated with high capacity transportation. But if you look up and down the region, there are so many places that are already developed now that have the potential for redevelopment and infill coordinated with transportation to absorb a lot of that growth. So to not just think about one community or even a sub part of the region, but the whole region working together and functioning well.
Okay, thank you, Andrew. One of the things that I have the pleasure to be is a planning commissioner, and I'm thinking about, well, how does something like this get used locally? And this, like a general plan, I think is a useful thing, as I think about it, that you're having a community, the community's coming out and they're concerned about growth. They're concerned about intensity. And you can reflect and say, look, we've had a citywide conversation embedded in our general plan about where more intense forms of development make sense, and these are those locations. Here's why they make sense. And density, intensity need not be everywhere, but these are the places where it does make sense. And maybe that can be part of the strategy to say, let's be deliberate about these tough questions about how we grow. Okay, thank you, Andrew. Now, this is great for telling the high-level story of Wasatch Choice, but this is not enough. The idea with Wasatch Choice 2050 is that it is linked to planning. Your planning, regional transportation planning, economic development planning, that it has a foot in implementation. And so what we're doing is, this is not totally ready for prime time, but we're translating this into a brand new web resource that we're really excited about. Here's the idea. You go to a web page, you can have a link that takes you right to your city or town or county. You see the vision and you see how economic development, land development, and transportation integrate together based on our shared vision. But then you can tab over, I'm pointing now with my digit, to the different planning elements and analytical considerations, yes, I actually use that phrase, that take the vision and implement it. So we're on the vision. You can go to the transportation tab. We're just looking at this area because this happens to be where our office is. It's not that we're Salt Lake City centric. And so this becomes, then this tab is the actual regional transportation plan map. So you go from the vision, then you can go to the transportation plan map, you can click on individual projects, get details about cost, phasing, and the like. Very much, the vision is the foundation for the regional transportation plan. But you can also then go to a land use tab that includes both details on the assumptions about different centers. How intense does it mean to be a urban center? What are the assumptions behind that? And other information about how land use is functioning. It could be, for example, fiscal impacts of different growth decisions. The third tab, economic development. Here we're showing, for illustrative purposes, but for starters, where are industry clusters? So that you're thinking, okay, vision, how does it relate to these key considerations that help us collectively translate that vision into more specific planning and implementation actions? And then we also have a fourth tab for amenities, open space, trails, and the like. So we're bridging this gap from visioning to helping us all think about implementation steps. So I'm gonna pause and see if you have any comments or suggestions for us, because we're mocking this up, we're working on it for a launch in mid-September, and Julie's going to talk about those next steps after this pause. Okay, that means I did a remarkably good job. Julie?
Stand here, the microphone.
Okay.
So in addition to the interactive map that I just showed you, we're using that data that feeds into those interactive maps to do our next initiative, which is the state of the centers, and we're hoping to also roll that into the state of the cities and the state of the region. And this is, what you see here is a list of some of the data that we want to collect from the state of the centers. Basically, the idea is now that we are launching Wasatch Choice 2050, we like to get an understanding of how well the region, the cities, the centers are doing in meeting their regional goals, the goals that develop the vision. The idea is that we would create a baseline report and update this every few years to kind of see how we're moving towards that vision. So for the state of the centers, we're looking at how well we're helping with economic development, land use, and transportation. So things like how well are we helping with access to opportunities, keeping housing and transportation costs low. For land use, how well are our centers mixed in terms of housing and just general land use, and how well are we providing for the health of our communities through access to open space. And then for transportation, one of the key things about centers is that they're providing transportation options and that they're walkable, so we'll also measure those. The idea is that this is just a mock-up of what, let's say it's Headville and the county of Rivershire
really
might be. I didn't know how to pick out anyone. The idea is that it will be a graphic display of how well your community, not how well, because it's not a report card, but just give you some indicators of how the state of the centers are. Both the state of the centers and the map that Ted just showed you should be available by September 12th. This is in the middle of the Utah League of Cities and Towns Conference. That Thursday is typically Planners Day, and Diversity and others have hijacked this day to call it Wasatch Choice Day. And the idea is that we have breakout sessions focused around our four key strategies, providing transportation choices, supporting housing options, preserving open space, and linking economic development with transportation and housing choice. The speakers will go into best practices, local case studies, talk about implementation and tools that we can do to build out the vision. And the speakers will include people from WFRC, MAG, UTA, UDOT, as well as local practitioners and experts. Reed is one of the speakers. And then we'll have some highlighting case study cities in each one of the breakout sessions. On that same day, there's two keynote speakers, Jim and Cozy, who does, can't remember the word, assets, maximizing your local assets, and have done work for Ogden and Salt Lake County, and then Dave Biggs, who runs a public engagement company. And I don't know if you wanted to add anything more about these two keynote speakers.
Sure, thank you, Julie. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about it briefly. One person's hijacking is another person's partnership. I refer to it as hijacking. This actually is historic in the history of the league to partner with another entity for our conference. We did this a couple of years ago with UAC in our spring conference where we had an overlap, and we're doing it now with Wasatch Front Regional Council. As Julie indicated, the Thursday, the day two of this conference, traditionally is geared toward planning, but this will be the first time it will be a coordinated effort with every planning stakeholder in the state to help local government leaders know how to implement this overall vision. Part of the urgency around it is compliance with SB 34, which the legislature passed with league support last year. But part of it is also the perfect timing of unveiling what you're hearing today. So it's a tremendous opportunity to get this information in front of city leaders, both staff and elected officials. We'll have several hundred people there during that conference. The two keynote speakers that you see, Joe Minicozzi and Dave Biggs, bookend this conversation really nicely. In Joe's case, as you heard, he's done work with Salt Lake County, with Ogden and Weber County, but his objective is to help city leaders see their city differently, understand the value of their land use differently, and understand the connectivity and how the benefit back to the city can be different compared to, say, the land uses of the past. So he'll kick off the morning, we'll go into these breakout workshops, and then we come back at lunch for what really is the 800-pound gorilla in every one of these conversations. And that is, how do we go from an echo chamber here, literally and figuratively, where we're talking about planning and preparing for the future, to the resident who doesn't have the benefit of sitting through these presentations and having the time to go through all the online resources. Dick Biggs is an expert on public engagement and detoxifying the discussion between residents, developers, elected officials, planning commissioners, and the like. Because that's the hook, that's the key. That's how we grow in a responsible way, is to bring along the public, and Dave is a national expert. The other thing I'll add that we're doing that's not on Thursday, it's earlier in the week, is we're partnering with Salt Lake County and the Urban Plan Workshop, which will bring together city leaders and planning commissioners and staff and go through an all-day exercise about what it means to actually bring a development online. So a city leader can learn the perspective from a developer can learn the perspective of a city, and this is new to Utah. This has only happened once in Utah, and it happened for the first time last week up in the city of Layton. So we'll be the second, and thank you to Salt Lake County and Wasatch Front Regional Council for the partnership so that we can experiment with this at our conference and hopefully have these exercises, which are also geared toward engaging the public as part of our conference and hopefully in city council chambers in the months and years to come. So very excited about the partnership / hijacking, and excited.
I was trying to get people to pay attention.
Yeah, you got my attention then. Excited about this opportunity.
Just one thing I want to note. So it is the League of Cities and Towns conference, but that day is open to, well, it's really open, the whole thing's open, but that day in particular, you can do a single day registration. And so if you're not a city, that is okay. If you're from a county, there's a lot of county partners or any other entity, you are not just welcome, but really encouraged to participate in that day. The part of the partnership here is to broaden it out so that we can have, as Cam said, all of the folks that are engaged in planning for and thinking about the future of our communities and our region and our state to be involved. Right, Cam?
Yeah. Anybody who wants to register and pay as well?
And then there's one other outreach that Percy wants to mention. This is the Wasatch Choice Implementation Workshops. You'll have a map in front of you. But the plan is for Percy as well as the League, UTA, and Madden and Utah County to go out to our local communities and have an in-depth conversation about the vision in your area, some opportunities and challenges to implementing that. We'll be bringing the State of the Centers and other data to talk with you about. And then also highlighting new state planning standards, how to harvest these standards to make big impacts, so that's SB 34. And then also talk about new ways to compete for funding. So this isn't just competing for existing funding streams, but what new funding streams are available. And then, as most of you know, the major funding streams for transportation are getting, updated to better coordinate land use and transportation. So we'll have some discussions there, but the focus here is what's in the vision for your area and how can the transportation partners work better with the cities to help implement that vision. And this will be from September 23rd through basically the end of the year. So on the map in front of you, you have a date for each of your local subregions. Anything you want to add about that, Ted or Andrew?
I'll just note that we are reaching out to city councilors, land commissioners, mayors, county commissioners, yes, and key staff in land use, transportation, and economic development. So similar to previous rounds, this is kind of a great cross-section of people that represent local communities, cities, towns, counties, and so it's a cool way for you to interact with those groups internally, but also with communities that surround you.
Okay. We have a choice. # where matters.
Awesome. Julie, thank you, and Ted and Andrew, thank you, and just a final note on this is. Maybe just a reminder, this Wasatch 2050 plan and the process and these outreach meetings and the opportunity to really go through this and have input is because this is not the plan of the Wasatch Front Regional Council staff. This is our plan, and we have the opportunity to shape the future and to make these decisions. That's of what we're here to do. So we look forward to that engagement and appreciate the opportunity to bring so many great minds and everyone who cares about this to the table to make the best decisions. So thank you. Okay, item 5 on our agenda is policy updates relevant to the Wasatch Choice Vision. And we have the brilliant and beautiful Winnie Davenport here, and we are really grateful for her and her willingness to come and present to us Wasatch Choice 2050 integrates local visions with regional transportation. And Lanise is going to give us an update on the implementation of a couple of bills that also interrelate local planning with infrastructure. We have Senate Bill 34, which we know focuses on housing, and Senate Bill 136, which focuses on transportation. And these two correlate really with a goal of integration that will help us maximize the benefits of local and regional planning infrastructure. Big picture. We're talking big picture here. So Lanise,
thank you.
Yours.
Thank you very much for that lovely introduction. So yeah, so we've heard all of this, the great things that are happening around the Wasatch Choice 2050 vision. And Senate Bill 34, Senate Bill 72, and Senate Bill 136 just sort of take that to a whole other level at the local and state at the levels, basically. So let me talk a little bit about, we already went over that. Let me talk a little bit about Senate Bill 34, the Affordable Housing Modifications Bill. So as most of you already know, this bill passed last session. And it matters to you because it really affects the way local governments, cities and counties, plan your housing, land use, and transportation, right? This affects your general plan, planning requirements. Before I move on, before I forget, I want to invite Cameron Dale from the League and Andrew and anybody else to offer comment throughout this presentation. They were key players in this process as well. Let me give you an example of how Senate Bill 34 adjusts the land use element of a city's general plan. Cities and counties must now consider where to locate housing for persons with all types of income levels. This is new, right? This was not a requirement in the past. One other element in the moderate income housing element of a city's or county's general plan, you're now required to prepare and adopt this moderate income housing element and report on it every year. The plan, that moderate income housing plan piece, is required this year, the end of the year, December, I think it's due December 1st, thank you, 2019. And then the following year, so December 1st of 2020, you're required to report on the implementation efforts of that moderate income housing general plan element. So it's a big change. There's a variety of resources out there, including from WFRC and the League and others, on what that planning and what the reporting requirements look like. So I invite you all to take a look at that, and we have that on our website if you have questions on that. The Wasatch Front Regional Council, obviously we focus on traffic and transportation, and there are key changes to the traffic and transportation element of Senate Bill 34. So I'm gonna focus the rest of the Senate Bill 34 presentation on those elements. We have staff here that created a really incredible resource for you, the local governments. This is a story map that's available on our website. And if anybody that has a computer or you'd like to follow along, please feel free to do so. You go to our website, wfrc.org, hover over the maps and data link, and then click on the general plan data and map resources for Senate Bill 34. And we can go through this resource. So I'm just going to spend a minute going through some of the key elements of Senate Bill 34 and the new requirements on the traffic and transportation elements. Okay, the first one, SB 34 asks that you consider the region's long-range transportation plan developed by the region's MPO. That's us, right? So we just released our new 2019 to 2050 regional transportation plan. It's up, and there's a link to it from this story map if you click on number 2. And you click on the hyperlink, or you can go into your city and find all of the road, transit, and active transportation projects within your city that are part of the regional transportation plan, in addition to the land uses. What else?
Lenise, can I just note on that, and forgive me if you're gonna say this, SB 34 now asks communities to also have an active transportation plan. And so because that's new, I wanted to highlight it, and that we in turn collectively
seek to bring in assumptions about where you want to go with your active transportation into our regional transportation plan. But for those communities that don't yet have an active transportation plan, that's a great place to start and to begin thinking about, well, what do we want to do in our community?
That's awesome. Thank you, Ted. All right. The other requirement Senate Bill 34 asks you to do is to plan for housing and commerce near major transit investment corridors. So you might not be totally aware of where those major transit investment corridors are located. We've mapped that for you. So you can go to this number 3, click on your area, and it pulls up your major transit investment corridors, basically light rail and front runner, in addition to the transit stations, right? So to help you implement that element. So for example, in Farmington City has a front runner line going through, and they also have the Farmington station. So they have two of those items there. All right, SB 34 also asks you to correlate your transportation element with population and employment projections. This resource was not available at the city level up until now. So we're happy to be able to provide this as a resource to you. Basically, we've calculated the population and employment projections per year and in 5-year groups through the year 2050. So take a look at, this is tabs 5 and 6 here on this story map to give you an idea of the population projections. And then finally, you just need to correlate your transportation element with your land use element. Any questions on that as a resource or any of that information that I just presented before we move on to access to opportunities information?
Lynise, let me add in on that, if you don't mind, that those very projections underpin the regional transportation plan. And that might be part of the reason why the bill asks to coordinate that is, you know, if a community is growing, they're going to tend to get more transportation investment. And if your vision is not to not grow, then we should try to square that over time with the regional transportation plan and vice versa. So this is about, you know, having that great link between local and regional.
Thank you. So one other resource that we have been putting a lot of attention on, and it's a really good resource for you at the local government level, is this Access to Opportunities tool. Basically, this just is another data set available that helps you make more informed decisions on your land use and transportation, right? So, for example, if you are considering where to put the next, well, we don't love it, if we got the next Adobe or IHC or possibly even a tech college, where would be the right place in your community to put that new business? This information can help you identify where in a certain geographic area, how many households are available, in other words, how many employees would be available within that geography, and it tells you the travel time by road and by transit. And then it also does the inverse. So it helps identify the number of businesses available to a household. And it does this by travel time. So I don't know if that was the best description of ATO, and Ted and Andrew, anybody else, feel free to add into that. But it's really cool. I invite you to check it out. Check out this story map website and play around with the data. It's really good. Your planners and economic development representatives will love it. Any questions before we move on? Okay, let me move on quickly. There's two more pieces of legislation I'd like to highlight that affect us all. So Senate Bill 136, this passed during the last legislative session, and it did a couple main things that are relevant to you. Basically, it directed that the State Transportation Commission modify the state's Transportation Investment Fund, the TIF, the prioritization processes to include land use and economic development considerations, right? This is new, this has never been done before. So now at the state level for capital infrastructure projects, prioritization processes must look at land use and economic development. Senate Bill 136 also created a transit transportation investment fund, we're calling a TTIF. And there's about $6 million in the TTIF and $700 million in the TIF. The TTIP will grow over time, so it might be a little bit low right now, but it'll definitely grow over time. But UDOT had, along with their partners, including Wasatch Front Regional Council, has been working really hard on developing the prioritization processes for the TIF and the TTIF. And then let me touch on Senate Bill 72. This passed during the last session. This is basically just a technical follow-up bill to Senate Bill 136. And what it does is it increases the tie between the region's metropolitan planning organization, like the Wasatch Front Regional Council, with the TIF. So now projects can only be considered for TIF funding if they're in the region's long-range transportation plan. So that's important. Additionally, Senate Bill 72 authorized the TIF and the TTIP to be used for active transportation, pedestrian, and trail projects. Pedestrian.
First and last mile.
And first and last mile. So there's now four models that UDOT and the Transportation Commission will eventually approve, right? So we can highlight those a little bit here. There's a draft rule that's out right now that'll be adopted soon. And then UDOT is currently developing a model for their highway, for their road, for their first last mile, for active transportation, and for transit. So these are prioritization processes for all four of those different types of projects to be funded under TIF. So it's a big deal. It's happening right now. We expect this to be done and complete and approved in November. And then that'll follow UDOT and Transportation Commission will follow their regular funding cycle. I think that's all I have.
Let me just offer a brief supplement to this, Lunice. Thank you very much. This is a really big deal for a few reasons. One, it's a lot of money that is being expended by the state of Utah on transportation infrastructure. Lunice said, and I just want to highlight, over $700 million per year is going from state sales tax into transportation. Right now, almost entirely for new road capacity projects through UDOT. And now there's this new TTIF, which is a transit transportation investment fund, which Lenise mentioned, is starting off at about $6 million a year, and it'll grow over time. So that sort of points out, as I was talking before about that, relative balance, or lack thereof, of investment. However, I want to say that it is awesome that the state, for the first time, is saying, let's put some money into both modes, let alone active transportation. And so just for those of you that are thinking, well, wait a second, I've got an investment that I know is coming in my community, and you're saying the Transportation Commission you got are changing the rules, does that mean that like my project that I'm already planning for is in jeopardy? The answer is no. The projects that are already funded in the STIP, this Transportation Improvement Program, between now and 2024, will not be affected by this. What they're looking at doing is looking beyond 2024, and Chris is here. Chris, you can tell us if we're wrong or if you want to add to this, okay, please. Okay, great. And so beyond 2024, or if there was new unanticipated revenue available, then this new process would be utilized to program, prioritize those funds, okay? So I just wanted to give a little bit of context to that, and then Chris Chestnut from UDOT.
So just a couple items on that. Thanks, I think that's right on. Just one more thing that was also added into 136 and 72 is the addition of transportation reinvestment zones. I think this is another powerful financing tool to connect land use and transportation together. It kind of functions like an RDA, but it's another financing tool. I just wanted to bring that up as well. I think, if I remember correctly, the TTIF grows to a couple of $100 million over the next 30 years. So it really kind of ramps up at the latter half of that. That's my understanding, if I remember the models correctly.
Is that correct, Chris? That's right, with, I think, an important caveat that in a relatively complex way that I won't explain right now, the amount of money that goes into TTIF is tied to the revenue that comes from the gas tax. It's not actually gas tax money, but it's tied to the growth of the gas tax. So the point is that what's going to happen with the gas tax in the future is really uncertain. How much revenue is going to keep coming in from the gas tax? So I would say that we can sort of make projections, but there's a lot of uncertainty about how much revenue there's actually going to be there.
Thank you. Let's see what else. Oh, actually happening right now. at the Transportation Commission is a discussion on this administrative rule for the reprioritization process of the models. So that discussion's happening. There's some really important items that are being talked about in there. So please, all that information is available publicly on UDOT's website. So please take some time as elected officials and as people who help with policy to review those and weigh in on those items eventually.
Chris, thanks. And Lanise, Lanise is going to email out more info about the specifics of the rule, including a link to the rule itself, right, in the next day or so that you can all see it. And we'll keep sharing information with you about it, right?
Yeah, look for that email tomorrow. That's great. Thank you.
Thanks, Lanise. Okay, we're... Cam. Go ahead.
The bills that Lanise just described are game changers. And we're going to see the benefits of these bills in the next 5, 10, 20 years. One other key component from SB 136 is that UDOT is going to be implementing a pilot program for a road user charge in lieu of the gas tax. This is the long-term strategy to replace the motor fuel tax. It will supplement it for now, but be the long-term potential replacement. And instead of being a surrogate for a user fee for how people use transportation, it actually will be a user fee for how people use transportation. Oregon is the only state in the country right now with a fully implemented road user charge program.
It's still just a down, it's a small...
That's what I was about to say.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
And even theirs is small compared to what our pilot program could become. So this is another example of how Utah's leading out and trying to find some solutions for the future of the motor fuel tax. And it could have great benefits, not just for state coffers, but also for local coffers as a local revenue stream for cities, towns, and counties. So very excited about that possibility, and that pilot program gets underway in June.
Good question. How will it be implemented?
So it'll be based on the amount, thank you, of driving you do, but how will you monitor and motor vehicle with any sort of precision? Can you explain that? Because that would seem to be a big problem without transponders.
I think there is a plug-in to your car, is what I understand.
Correct. Yeah. They're working out those details now because they're trying to balance the privacy of the individual driver with the need to collect that amount of data for how many miles you're driving on the road. And so I know they're looking at electronic transponders. They're also looking at asking people to volunteer to be part of the pilot program to just keep track of your own mileage within the state of Utah and report it. So that's where the pilot program is starting small, so we can work out this appropriate balance between privacy and technology. My point is that as a millennial in the room, Apple knows where I am all the time. Yeah. Apple knows exactly what I'm doing all the time. So I'm less concerned about privacy, whereas if my dad were here, my dad hates this idea. But going forward, it'll be, I think, the way to address congestion pricing. It'll be a way to address actual usage of the roads. You could potentially see differences in the types of vehicle you drive, the heavier the vehicle, the more you pay. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there if we can get the pilot program.
Just one quick additional question. To what degree is the pilot program spelled out in terms of these details?
That's what they're working on now to unveil in January, so that'll be there's a real thing.
There's process
going.
And we can provide more info to anybody who wants it. Initially, it's just for alternative fuel vehicles, and UDOT has gone through a really detailed process of putting rules together and being very, very careful about this, and we're happy to share more detail about that if you want.
Alternative fuel vehicles from volunteers.
I wonder if we could make this an agenda item for the future to get a little bit more information, to have I would appreciate the chance to learn a little bit more about some of those details. Those are good questions, and I don't know the answers to them. We could bring that back as an agenda item in the future, that would be great. Okay, thank you. Thanks. Anything else, Cam? Okay. Thank you all. Number six on our agenda is the WFRC funding opportunities for local governments. We're going to turn some time over to Scott Hess, and I will call him the brilliant Scott Hess, but I will spare him the beautiful part because that might be awkward for him. There are six programs for local government funding in Wasatch Front Regional Council, and Scott's going to introduce some of these resources to us and kind of walk us through it. And okay, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I've been told that you have this down to a science that are going to take 1 minute per program.
Yep.
So everybody, buckle up and pay attention, because here we go.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of time in your meeting. The purpose of today's presentation is to explain Wasatch Front Regional Council's six programs, which are here, and we actually have the program lead for each of the programs here to give you their 1 minute spiel on their program. Each of the programs that we have are competitive. All of those applicants compete with other applications within the region or program planning boundary. So each of our programs have their own planning boundary or area that they serve. More details will be given. And in case you're unsure which program fits, just feel free to reach out to any one of us and really anybody on the staff. So don't feel like you need to memorize which programs have which application deadlines. Just feel free to reach out. And this is just to give you information on what's coming up. So to begin with, I'll start with the Wasatch Front Economic Development District. Our mission is to support economic development plans, promote long-term economic competitiveness, and attract federal monies in order to implement local plans. So what we're looking at are dollars in from the Economic Development Administration equal jobs out on the other side. So example applications that we've seen are planning requests to look at advanced composites in your community or other types of innovative technologies. You can do innovative maker spaces or entrepreneurial dollars can come into your area, workforce training requests, and these are all through three funding areas within the Economic Development Administration, Public Works Economic Adjustment Assistance up to $3 million to provide infrastructure, Regional Innovative Strategies, that's your entrepreneurial centers and innovation-based strategies in your community. And then local technical assistance, where we can help you with planning kind of along the lines of our Transportation Land Use Connection program, but really focused in on economic development. So if you have any interest, if you have a job provider on the line and you have an infrastructure need in your community, then talk to us. The Economic Development Administration funds can provide that gap funding to bring new jobs into your community. So that's the first. We're going to have Christy Dahlberg talking about Community Development Block Grant. And I don't know if that was 1 minute, but it was pretty short. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. So I'm Christy Dahlberg. I administer the Community Development Block Grant Small Cities Program for the Wasatch Front. The purpose of the CDBG program is to assist in developing viable urban communities by providing decent housing and a suitable living environment, principally for persons of low to moderate income. So eligible entities for the Small Cities Program for the Wasatch Front Regional Council are limited to Morgan, Tooele, and Weber counties, and that excludes Ogden City. So if that excludes your community, you still have access to CDBG dollars, just not to the Wasatch Front, either through your city or your county. They'll administer those funds. So this is a list of types of activities that can be funded using CDBG dollars. They're very broad in activities that you can do. We've funded fire equipment, storage bays, infrastructure projects, water, sewer, and public service provider projects as well. These are some projects that were funded during the last CDBG funding cycle. We have a total of around $870,000 to work with, so we've funded some ADA projects, water projects, curb and gutter projects. The average size of a grant is about $165,000, and the minimum grant award is $30,000. The next cycle is gearing up to start in October, so if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. And next we'll have Bingham Townsend with the Transportation Land Use Connection Program.
Thanks, Christy. So looking at our committee and attendance here, we have Mayor Walson and Councilmember Winder Newton, Salt Lake County. We have Trustee Holbrook and Len Moore with UTA, if you don't hear, with Chris. So I'm really presenting our program. Almost half of this committee is program partners. So thank you for your partnership, and of course our Transportation and Land Use Connection program wouldn't be the same program without all of you. This is our planning technical assistance program. So this program supports local governments in their planning efforts and implements our Wasatch Choice Vision. Our next pretty poster. We have $1.5 million annually to administer this program. The goals of the TLC program are to maximize the value of investment in public infrastructure, enhance access to opportunities, increase travel options to optimize mobility, and create communities with opportunities to live, work, and play. So all of these things are part of our West Edge Choice Vision and part of a lot of the visions for your communities. In our 6 years of program existence, we've funded 79 projects, and 91% of our region has come to the TLC program for assistance, so we want to make that 100% this year. TLC meets communities wherever they are and moves them through the steps toward implementation. So that might be helping with plans, visions, community engagement, it might be policies, so zoning ordinances or complete streets policies, and it may be products, so looking into different financing strategies or, whatever products are, that kind of gets, there's a lot of things within that. So whatever it is that your community might need, talk to us about eligibility within TLC. Ben is going to finish this presentation.
Thank you, Megan. Good morning. So the last three projects or programs that we're going to talk about pertain to the urbanized areas. These funds are available for those in the Salt Lake, Davis, Weber, and the south end of Box Elder County, west of the Wasatch Front. And let me jump in the surface transportation program. We have about $10 million in the Ogden Layton urban area, about $20 million in the Salt Lake urbanized area. SDP funds are for those projects that are on federal aid eligible facilities, which would be functionally classified as a collector or grader. They can reconstruct or widen existing facilities, new construction, bridge improvements, intersections improvements. A good illustration of these funds that have been well used, this is a segment of 5600 West. On the west side of Salt Lake City, it was an existing two-lane facility with some irregularity in the cross section, but it was widened to a beautiful five-lane facility with curb gutter and sidewalk on both sides, with shoulders on both sides, and then there was bike lanes included on both sides of this facility. Most of our STP projects will include an active transportation component, giving us a lot more for the bang for the buck. And the Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Program, or the CMAQ funds, these projects have to demonstrate an air quality benefit. So they need to be commuter-related if it's a bike or pet-type facility. They can be for construction or purchase of public transportation. They can be for the intelligent transportation systems, or they can be for intersection improvements. Each one of these pictures illustrates types of projects that have been funded with the CMAQ program. There is an emphasis as we move forward with the CMAQ program that we identify projects. They may be beneficial in air quality or provide air quality benefits, but we're going to look for those projects that will increase that amount of benefit, meaning that we only have about $5 million in the Salt Lake urban area and about $3 million in the Ogden Lake urban area. The last program funds are the TAP funds, or the Transportation Alternative Program. These funds are used for non-motorized or pedestrian type facilities, bike facilities, trails, sidewalks. A good illustration of these funds that have been well used is on the DNRG rail trail through the area. These projects have provided an opportunity to provide recreational improvements, unify communities, and provide safe routes for both bike and ped users. Normally this time of year we come, and I should go back there on the TAP funds, we have about $900,000 available in the Salt Lake urban area and about $500,000 available in the Ogden Lake urban area. Usually we've requested letters of intent. The latter part of September, we've moved that up a month. We'll actually be sending out that request for letters of intent near the end of August. And then those letters of intent will be due back to us by the middle part of September. And then we'll be preparing and making a request that the concept reports, which will be requested from each potential project sponsor, be returned back by the early part of December, enabling us more time to go through our evaluations and obtain the information that we need to. Are there any questions on any of the programs that we've covered today?
And can I just offer one quick sort of concluding comment here? We really love being able to help the communities in the region, and there's a lot of programs, and Scott said at the beginning, you don't need to feel like, my gosh, I gotta remember all of these programs and all these acronyms and everything. We try to make this easy. The first step, as has been described, is submitting a letter of intent. That's a simple form. And if you send and you say, hey, we've got a need, help us, then that gives our staff the ability to look and say, hey, you applied in this area, but actually, it might be more productive to actually do an application in this other program. We can help you with that. So we want it to be a low bar and easy entry. And in addition to that, there are other resources for infrastructure investments in the region beyond what WFRC has. UDOT, UTA, the counties, the COGS, and what we do on staff is coordinate across all of those entities. So we just want to be able to be as helpful as possible to you as you're trying to address the needs in your community. So just let us know what your needs are with a simple letter of intent. We can take it from there.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, really quickly, as Andrew and Ted know, we have completed a national survey of MPOs. Over 400 were contacted about TLC-type programs, and we learned a lot. And I'll just, as a tickler, make one point. We'd love to come and present on findings from the survey. We got a pretty good response rate, about 100 MPOs responded, and about maybe one in four of those have a program that is kind of TLC-like, but with variations. And the big difference among programs is funding level, and the ones that are actually using some of the money for capital improvements have the big funding levels, and the ones that just do planning and technical assistance have the small levels. And I think, and you and I talked a little bit about this, and you know, what does that imply, but it's kind of cool. What happens is a planning grant is given to a local government. They prepare a main street plan, and then streetscape improvements are funded as a follow-up to the original planning, and the amounts of money are much, much larger. And I'd love to see us debate kind of the future of TLC and whether it could be even more than it is now. And by the way, it's just a terrific program. Everyone knows that, but could be even more terrific, maybe.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, item 7 on our agenda is the UTA Service Choices, and we have Trustee Beth Holbrook here from UTA to explain ways that they are working to gather feedback to develop future bus networks with guidelines for service performance. And Trustee Holbrook, we really appreciate you being here, and we appreciate the opportunity to weigh in on this and to give input, for communities to give input on UTA's service options and the different choices. So we're going to turn the time over to you and just thank you for the chance that we all have in advance to really weigh in on this.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to do this. And hopefully everyone has seen this one. Go ahead. I tried to make this as big as possible, and you'll know why in the future. Really quickly, this is our timeline in terms of doing this service choices. And I'll just refine. You probably saw our incredibly talented Laura Hansen present this earlier. And this is specifically regarding buses. And what her team did is basically trying to strategize as to what type of service we have today and what type of service do we want to have tomorrow. And with that intention in mind and how we can coordinate with our own communities, we developed a service choices, basically an analysis of what we have, what we want to do, and what the input has been. So I'm gonna go over this just a little bit. So if you wanna go to the next slide, you can see the timeline is and I apologize, I just went past it and I'm just gonna say this. Next month, our Board of Trustees is going to be taking all of this data that we're getting from our communities and make a decision as to how to structure this moving forward. So with that in mind, go ahead. this is the goal, right? These are the things that, that there's an expectation that UTA can provide for the communities that we serve. And obviously, one of the things that, that we have a challenge with is, and it's been mentioned multiple times, is budget. We have adequate budget to cover our existing services, and we don't have the budget to do any capital outlays right now. So that we have to make these types of decisions with what we have. Next slide, thanks. Keep going. So really quickly, the ridership, it's pretty straightforward. You want to have as many riders as possible to maximize the value of the service that's provided, whether it's a BRT or whether it's a standard bus. The coverage means that we're not going to, next slide, we're not going to just focus on one specific, more dense area for getting access for people, but we're going to give coverage to everywhere. So the proverbial Mrs. Jones's types of things. And it's how do you take a look at your community and decide what is going to maximize the value for my community based on where it's at. You can see where you're tucking your ridership, you're taking your major corridor transit or your major transportation corridors and you're maximizing them. That gives you more frequency, more time services, and obviously, you know, greater days if you're talking Saturday and if they're talking weekends in general. Next one. And then this is the coverage model, which means that the frequency is not there. And certainly the timelines are rather more restricted in some ways, just because of the length of time to get access to all those different areas. So ridership, coverage. It's right now, it's a balance. Next slide. I'm trying to go a little bit fast. I know you guys have all seen this before. As you can see right now, this is on a scale. So there's not any one specific area that we say, oh, it's 100% one way or another. Next slide. Go ahead.
Could you just back up just for one second?
You bet.
Because what you're showing on the slide here is the actual mix in the communities that UTA is serving. So like on the right side, you can see like Box Elder,
yeah.
The service provided is more on coverage, whereas in Salt Lake, it's more on the ridership. So like each of the people that are looking here can see how they fall within that right now, how the service is designed, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And for those of you, there's a handout on your with all of your information, and it talks about some of the coverage services that we have and what our summaries have that actually details that. So thank you, Evan, that was a great point. One of the things that we are doing right now we're doing this in conjunction with the local advisory council. So I've actually attended a council presentation meeting for Weber County that Mayor called in. He's on the local advisory council. And the discussion points were pretty straightforward. He asked, here's what we have, which is basically for Weber County, it's a 60-40 model, which means 60%, in this case, coverage, 40% ridership. And there was the dialogue between all of those mayors and the commissioners as well as to what is it that's going to maximize the value of our service moving forward. And again, the intention of any major implementation changes will be in the year 2020. So our August 2020 change date when this would be implemented. What we're also doing, in addition to that, is we're going to all of these areas to get that community feedback, to give those mayors and council members and commissioners the input of what we currently have, what the community in their area said, and how we can strategically look to do that moving forward. And that's it with that. So now I want you guys to turn to your handouts, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that exact dialogue. And I know I'm a little tight on time, so I'm gonna just anybody ask questions at any time, but basically if you look at the community engagement summary where it talks about the service areas, the existing resources and additional resources, and then what the community leadership workshops provided as far as input for that ridership. Obviously the coverage priorities is the bottom left column, and that is actually the results of these questions that we asked these various entities, whether it was the public, community leaders, et cetera. And it's how should we strategize and use our dollars more effectively. Now we, as the Board of Trustees, have a decision to make in terms of getting all of this data. And you can see that there is
there's a lot of potential for possibilities. One of the discussion points is we don't have necessarily the same throughout our entire system. For instance, in Salt Lake County, it is 60-40, but it's 60% ridership, 40% coverage, and the same for Utah County. So what is it that's going to make sense for one county doesn't necessarily mean it's going to make sense for the other. But the discussion point for these regions is, what is it that's going to maximize the value for the communities that are being developed moving forward? How is it going to take into account growth? How is it going to take into account housing? If you, so I'll talk about the Weber County. So I know that I've been involved. I went to the Weber County one, and I've also met with Bunk Elder commissioners on this as well. I have yet to get to Davis Cog. It's going to be next week, and I know that my counterparts are doing this in their same areas as well. And what we're finding is that, and this is what I'm going to throw out to you guys, and I want you to give me a little bit of feedback. We're finding that people are saying, I want to take what you have existing and kind of keep it this way. When you look at Davis County and Weber County, for instance, they're kind of long and skinny geography-wise. It's really a challenge to do a maximization of ridership. There's very few corridors of transportation, so you do have to balance that out with a bit of coverage to get around. What I'm hearing from them, though, is that if we have future money, if there is something in addition to this, we want to focus on ridership. And that is what we have been hearing moving forward. Now, this is just a utilization of what resources would we do and how would we do it? And how would that percentage change? Maybe, for instance, in Davis County, I have to speculate, maybe they're going to say, we still need the coverage. We still want to do this maximization of having access to the eastern side as well as the western side of these communities. Maybe look at Farmington City, for instance, and maybe that's going to be more valuable to them because they have a transit stop. How is it that we're going to tie into those things? And each of these communities are giving us varied perspectives. I'll tell you, Roy City told me 90% coverage, 10%, or excuse me, 90% ridership, 10% coverage. Moving forward, they're built out. They don't feel like there's any changes they can make to their roads. I want to add one more thing, and then please give me some feedback. I know I threw a lot at you. One of the things that we wanted to do with this information as well is talk to all of our communities. And when we talk strategic planning, we also want to make sure that we emphasize the fact that in order to accommodate the maximization value of transit, or maximize the value of transit in an area, we need to have a good, solid grid system type format when we're thinking about access to certain points. It's a real challenge to send a bus into a very residential community. And there's, we obviously get feedback that says it's not a very practical thing to do as well. So with that said, that's going to be part of our dialogue. But this is the decision that the board is going to be making in September. So, yes.
So, I think you may have funded the work we did at the university on this. I can't remember, it was Tory Alliance work. We conceived it differently. We had service frequency, meaning headways between buses, versus service coverage, which is defined the same way you have. And we found that service frequency produces more ridership than coverage does. So your ridership coverage balances is just a different way of saying frequency versus coverage. But I think the clearer way of putting it is you can have more frequent service or you can have greater coverage. And then what effect will that have on ridership? And if you didn't fund it, I can certainly get you a copy of the analysis that was done. I think they're both important. And Tori's dissertation talks about transit equity. When you begin to think of it not just as ridership as the ultimate goal, we want a lot of riders, as many as we can get, and service frequency is the way to get that, but you think of it in terms of equity, then all of a sudden coverage becomes more important.
That is an excellent point, and thank you. I don't know about that particular study. Perhaps Laura would know about that.
I have a copy of that. Thank you.
Thank you. We actually engaged Jarrett Walker and Associates to do this analysis of our system. But your point is excellent in the sense that it is going to be a policy decision for those communities and working in conjunction with UTA as a whole to determine what is it that is going to be of most value. When we hear comments, typically it's, why is there an empty bus? Or why is there only one person on that bus? And it's a real challenge to balance out that information. If you see down onto the, again, on the left lower hand corner where it says coverage priorities, that's the feedback that we're getting as to what type of a policy decision we should be making down the road. As a side note, I just want to shout out that Gary Uras used FrontRunner to get here today. Go team. I think that it definitely is something that there is something to be said about people who want to, you know, everyone has paid into this system in this area. I should have, you know, speaking of the proverbial, I should have access to UTA as well. Even it doesn't matter necessarily where I live. And so it's how do we balance out those types of decisions? And what we're hearing publicly and from officials thus far is that we need to focus on ridership if we have future dollars. That's the key. So with that, any other questions? Yes.
So help me understand future planning, because we do have funding options going forward. We've been authorized at our legislative levels to impose an additional increment. And I know that that's got to fit into all of this. Carlton kindly came in to brief me, and I think he did our legislative body, the county council as well, related to I think perhaps some level of misperception that the implementation of the additional increment the fourth quarter in terms of UTA's capturing that revenue would allow us to go a little deeper. We have had action by our county council in years past about the need for coverage on the west side of Salt Lake County. I think from a perspective of, you know, we know that residents in much of our sort of north area of our west side have a bit of a challenge getting to jobs, the frequency matters there, service expansion. But I think we all, maybe looking at this from a higher level and not in the weeds as you are now, felt like that was gonna, this, you know, increment would help us solve that problem. And then Carlton had kindly shared, well, look, we've got maintenance issues. We get that. We see that as well with a lot of the investment we've made at Salt Lake County, some of our larger facilities and what have you. We've got to make sure that, in our case, our rec centers are well kept, you know, cared for before we can expand. So I think I get it. And I also know that the volume or the flow in from the federal government has shifted dramatically in the past little bit of time. So help me understand how to engage with you to figure that all out, because regardless of our understanding of the complex situation you're in, we still have demands, we still have needs, we still have an interest in serving communities that are trying to move the needle. So what planning, like, help me better understand how to engage. And I think this may or may not be relevant to other counties and other people at the table. As we look at strategic decisions, collect, you know, sort of coordinating with Wasatch Front, coordinating with our own planning teams and our legislative bodies as we look at whether or not we will be willing to support you further in the future.
I appreciate that, Mayor. I think I would agree with that, because one of the things that we look at, we do have to balance it out, obviously, and state of good repair is what we call our maintenance, and that is a critical component for us, obviously, because no one's going to ride the bus if it breaks down all the time, right? That's the challenge. And so there is that component of it. There's also, I agree, there is probably a more strategic planning that we can take a look at. Salt Lake City, as you know, funded specifically increased service on some key ridership points. They are access to different areas. They're access to either the University of Utah or on the 9th South area. And it goes further west as well to kind of capture kind of in that northwest segment, I think, that you were alluding to. This is also a part of how would we look at our existing, I don't want to overstep the new money type of discussion point, but it's also how do we look at our current existing sales tax revenue, and is that best spent in the way that we're doing it now, i.e. the 60-40, 40-60, depending upon where you're at, or do we shift? Do we shift our existing services? So how do we manage all of that out? And that is specifically what Laura's team is working on, and that is kind of part of this dialogue as well, because we know there's not any one good answer for anyone, but we want to make sure that we're getting as much feedback as we can, because when we make these types of changes, it obviously impacts all of our communities that have a change in service. And one of the things that we also want to talk about, and I know I'm going way over, is we wanted to talk about when we're looking at future development in terms of either housing or work areas, bus is part of that dialogue too, in a different way than, say, the Front Runner or Trax, but it's still an integral part. And people rely on the bus services, and that's part of some of their decision making, especially if they have only opportunity to get access to one vehicle, for instance. And so all of those things kind of have to coalesce with our planning, but we fully intend to make sure that we can bring as many partners along as possible. So that's why we're here today. We want to, if there's more that we need to be doing, that's what we want to be doing in the future. So I hope that kind of helps.
And maybe it's an offline Laura and Councilmember Newton's here. She could help on the council side. But I do think that as we look at our strategies, our land use planning, and our cooperative relationship with Wasatch Front and others, that discussion's timely for us. And so maybe we could just do it offline, figure out a way to engage a few council members, perhaps some folks here, you, Beth, you, Laura, and kind of get that conversation moving.
Yeah, for sure. We'd be happy to do that.
Love to. Thank you so much for the time, and thank you for letting me go over.
Thank you, all of you. Thank you. Good conversation. We appreciate it. The time to weigh in is now. So thank you. Okay, a note of business. Our next meeting is on October 10th, and it will be here at 9:45 a.m. And I am now prepared to entertain a motion to adjourn. We have a motion and a second. All in favor of adjourning, please say aye.
Aye.
Yes, Mike, as adjourned. Thank you for being here.